One in three Floridians get their drinking water from the Everglades, but the river of grass has long been in peril. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sussingham. The Everglades, Florida's vast freshwater system that starts near Orlando and meanders south, is in trouble. For years, environmental advocates and sugar growers have clashed over how to restore the river of grass. And billions of dollars in projects to do just that aren't going anywhere. Reporters from our Florida Public Radio stations in Orlando and Miami have been digging into the problems and solutions surrounding the Everglades. And this week on Florida Matters, we'll hear stories from their series, River of Grass, Dying of Thirst. First, Kate Stein from WLRN in Miami explains how the Everglades used to work. Let's call it Everglades 101.
Yeah, we are approaching the entrance.
Wayne Rassner is carrying a huge backpack and using a walking stick to make his way through knee-high muck. He's a guide at Everglades National Park and board chair of the South Florida National Parks Trust. Rassner takes a few more steps and the muck is gone.
And look at the water, how clear that is. You'll see if that were in a glass, it would look the same as a glass of drinking water because of natural filtration.
The Everglades are an ecosystem that starts at the headwaters near Orlando and goes all the way down into Florida Bay, off the southern tip of Florida. The Everglades used to be like a really, really slow river. They kept the land pretty wet all year long and gave vital fresh water to sawgrass on land and seagrass in the bay. The water flowed north to south, but today a lot of it runs east and west from Lake Okeechobee at the ecosystem center. And that's caused two problems for Floridians and our water.
New at 6, growing concerns about toxic green algae.
It's a growing threat to the marine and tourism economy.
State of emergency in four counties.
The first problem is that guacamole-thick blue-green algae that coated parts of Florida's coasts last summer. It hurt tourism and fishing in communities like Stewart, where Florida Senate President Joe Negron lives. He's trying to fix one of the main causes.
Flooding southeast and southwest Florida with billions of gallons of polluted water from Lake Okeechobee.
The water in Lake Okeechobee has unnaturally high levels of phosphorus. It got into the lake as fertilizer and manure from fields and farms. When the water in the lake gets too high, the extra water is sent east and west. It mixes with more fertilizer from lawns and bacteria from really old septic systems. All that makes algae blooms grow really fast. Negron wants to speed up planning to build a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee. Because if you can send the water south, it won't go east and west.
We're wasting billions of gallons of water in sort of two funnels.
Julie Hill Gabriel is with Audubon Florida. She agrees with Negron that the water should be sent south, which maybe seems kind of odd. Why would an environmentalist want fertilizer-heavy water seeping into the Everglades?
You know, the crux of Everglades restoration is trying to replace the flow of water north to south that made the River of Grass so unique and such a natural treasure.
Remember, there were two problems. The second, the one that causes a bunch of other problems, is water flow, or lack of water flow.
In the Everglades, we've built hundreds of miles of canals and levees, held water too high in some places, drained it from other places in order to allow agriculture and development to occur.
Now, water just doesn't flow south like it used to, which means Everglades National Park and the seagrass in Florida Bay are getting dehydrated. It's bad for tourism, bad for fishing, and
the water. All about the water.
Wayne Rassner, the Everglades National Park guide. He's sloshing toward an alligator hole in a dome of cypress trees and explaining how a lack of fresh water in the Everglades is bad news for the 8 million of us who get drinking water from the aquifer underneath.
Right, so the importance of keeping enough water above it is twofold. One is that that water seeps down into it.
Into the marshy soil, which acts as a natural filter and gives the aquifer more fresh water. The other reason the Everglades needs a steady flow of fresh water? Sea level rise.
It puts pressure against the salt water, which is trying to intrude. Once there's salt water intrusion into an aquifer, you've lost it.
The salt water has already begun pushing its way into the aquifer. And half of the original Everglades ecosystem has been lost to development, agriculture, and other human activity. Consider that the next time you turn on your tap for a drink. I'm Kate Stein in Miami.
There's a lot of attention and a lot of money going towards restoring the Everglades. Again, here's Kate Stein looking at what Everglades restoration actually means.
Let's start with what we're losing. One of the most biologically diverse places on Earth, from sawgrass to cypress trees, apple snails to alligators. The historic home of Florida's Miccosukee and Seminole tribes. The ecosystem that ensures fresh drinking water for more than 8 million Floridians. A national park. Everglades advocate Marjorie Stoneman Douglas talked about all this in an interview in 1983.
It was a marvelous expanse of flat green land with its strangeness and its openness and its birds. It's utterly unique, you see. There's not like anything else like it in the world.
More than 30 years later, Wayne Rassner is standing in a pool of water inside a cypress dome in Everglades National Park. He's a volunteer guide and the board chair of the South Florida National Parks Trust.
We don't have a giant waterfall or an enormous canyon or snow-covered mountains. We have a very subtle beauty.
To get here, Rassner drove several miles from the visitor center and walked into the swamp. Even out here, the sound of cars and planes is inescapable.
We've lost 50% of the ecosystem that we're not going to get back.
Mostly because of development, says Steve Davis. He's an ecologist with the Everglades Foundation. The Everglades freshwater aquifer is under siege from sea level rise. Parts of the ecosystem are flooded, others are so dry they're dying off. And massive water releases from Lake Okeechobee cause toxic algae blooms that throttle tourism and fishing on Florida's coasts. It wasn't supposed to get like this, ever, but especially since the year 2000. That was when President Bill Clinton and Florida Governor Jeb Bush signed a massive restoration plan. Happened to be the same day Bush v. Gore was decided. It's called the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan, or CERP. And it was supposed to be finished in the mid-2030s.
But at this pace, it's going to take a half century or more to finish.
Davis jumps from an airboat into a water conservation area near Tamiami Trail. In thigh-deep water, he grabs a slimy glob of periphyton, a freshwater mix of algae and other gunky particles.
It's one of our best indicators of water quality. When phosphorus levels get above about 10 parts per billion, which is the protective threshold we know for the Everglades, this periphyton will start to really break apart to the point where you don't find it anymore.
One of the goals of the restoration plan is to remove excess phosphorus. It's mostly from runoff, fertilizer from sugar fields and farms, lawns, and also sewage. Davis says cleaning the water is going well here, thanks in part to large man-made wetlands called stormwater treatment areas. There are six just below Lake Okeechobee. They clean the water as it flows slowly south, just like the natural Everglades once did.
With restoration, some would think that there's less of the hand of man involved with the management of the system. That's not going to be the case.
He says this is the only way to both help the Everglades resume its natural flow and ensure fresh water and flood control for millions of people. You can't just kick people out of Pahokee and Belglade, tear down the Herbert Hoover Dike, and let the water take back the land.
That's not, you know, we would certainly not advocate for, and the Corps of Engineers would never allow to happen after Hurricane Katrina.
Davis says even in the best case scenario, the restoration plan's impact might be hard to notice. A wetter dry season, more birds like roseate spoonbills and snail kites, healthier seagrass in Florida Bay. The thing is, we're nowhere near the best-case scenario. More of the Everglades is being lost to sea level rise. The Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Plan came out 17 years ago. it was supposed to be halfway done by now. Of its 68 planned projects, 6 are underway. None, 0, are complete. I'm Kate Stein in Miami.
At the heart of bitter debate over Central and South Florida's water are 60,000 acres of farmland south of Lake Okeechobee. Senate President Joe Negron and environmental groups want the land for Everglades restoration. From WMFE in Orlando, Amy Green reports that the region's farmers see that as a threat to their way of life.
Carson Turner reaches into a grassy row of sugarcane. He grips a stalk, jointed like bamboo, and breaks it, revealing the sweetness inside.
This will go into the mill. You can just about see, if we take about 20 steps backwards, you can see the smokestacks. And those get grinded. That raw sucrose that gets pushed out becomes the basis of table sugar that you and I consume all the time.
The cane field stretches to the horizon, where the world's largest sugar mill billows smoke. The mill serves as the heart of U.S. Sugar Corporation. Turner has lived among these fields nearly all of his life. He's a Hendry County commissioner.
When I look at these cane fields, I think of the actual families, the people that I grew up with, their children, their grandchildren, and what they've built these farms on with sweat equity.
Sugarcane fields like this one in Clewiston are what Senate President Joe Negron wants the state to acquire after excess water from Lake Okeechobee inundated estuaries last year on Florida's east and west coasts. That triggered toxic algae blooms that prompted emergency declarations in 4 counties. Negron says something has to change.
We're not on track. We're off track. What we're doing is not working. I'm not going to continue doing things and not taking additional steps when the current status quo is resulting in things getting worse and worse.
He wants the land for a $2.4 billion reservoir aimed at restoring a more natural flow of water south in the Everglades. The state would buy the land from willing sellers here in Florida's agricultural heartland. If no willing sellers are found, the state would have to buy the land from U.S. Sugar under a previous agreement, something the company staunchly opposes now that prices are surging. The Everglades is a watershed spanning Central and South Florida, and that supports the drinking water of more than a third of Floridians. Lake Okeechobee sits in the heart of it. Water laps at the lock and dam looming over the St. Lucie Canal on Lake Okeechobee's eastern side.
All this water was green, and if you walk over to the edge of the thing, you can see these 4 big bays, and they have the big doors. It's a dam, essentially.
Audubon of Florida scientist Paul Gray eyes the dam, the largest on the lake.
And they open those doors, and the water just goes flying out of here, and it goes straight down the canal. And the estuary is only 30 miles away, so it's a pretty straight shot.
Here is where more than 200 billion gallons gushed last year toward the St. Lucie River and Indian River Lagoon. That's what produced the toxic blooms.
This structure is just the source of so much controversy because it opens the way for the water to go where it's not wanted and where it's very harmful.
Since 2000, a reservoir south of the state's largest lake has been among the projects included in a $17 billion environmental restoration of the Everglades. The restoration is the world's largest of its kind, but planning on the reservoir is not scheduled to begin until 2021. Negron wants to speed that up, and new research shows the Everglades don't have time to waste. It suggests the River of Grass historically was much wetter than previously thought, and calls for more water storage throughout the Lake Okeechobee and Everglades regions. Here's Paul Gray.
This is the future of our water in Florida. And this water management system I mentioned was designed in 1949, and it was built between 1950 and 1970, so it took them about 20 years. And it cost a lot of money back then, and it has not been upgraded since then. So we're essentially living with a water management system that was built in 1949.
Back in Clewiston, Carson Turner says farmers are fearful. Some families have raised crops here for generations. Florida produces half of the nation's domestic supply of sugarcane.
Agriculture in general is under assault in the United States of America. And we're just on the front lines down here as it relates to our sugar industry.
Senate President Joe Negron plans on making the issue a priority of the legislative session. Amy Green in Orlando.
This is Florida Matters, and we've been talking about the plight of the Everglades and how Florida communities are trying to keep the iconic ecosystem alive. Coming up,
We need storage north of the lake and we need storage south of the lake, and neither one of those is going to be the end of the problem.
I'm Robin Sessingham. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about the Everglades, one of the world's most diverse ecosystems, where seagrass meets sawgrass and alligators live with apple snails. We'll head next on our journey to Lake Okeechobee. Reporter Amy Green explains why the state's largest lake will be at the center of debate over a reservoir proposed for Everglades restoration.
Marianne Martin motors the trails carved among the grassy bulrushes rimming Lake Okeechobee, emerging on a watery expanse that ends where blue meets blue at the horizon.
This is the Big O. Isn't it beautiful? Blows your mind. You can't see hardly across the lake.
She cuts the pontoon boat's engine. In the distance, anglers fish for bass, catfish, and crappie. Cormorants and pelicans take flight from a small island, their wings beating the water's surface. For 35 years, Martin has made a living from the lake as the owner of the Roland Martin Marina and Resort on its south shore in Clewiston.
When I saw this lake, I fell in love with it. And it speaks to you. If you just sit, listen, you hear the birds. It's just amazing. It's full of life.
Focus was on Lake Okeechobee last year as its excess water inundated estuaries on Florida's east and west coasts, triggering toxic algae blooms that prompted emergency declarations in four counties. The lake serves as the liquid heart of the Everglades.
It's hard to describe how much water this is.
Audubon of Florida scientist Paul Gray says a reservoir south of the lake is aimed at restoring a more natural flow of water south in the River of Grass. That's as new research calls for much more water storage throughout the Lake Okeechobee and Everglades regions.
What if we had a landowner that had 40 square miles? He said, hey, can we put a foot of water in your land? And they said, yeah, sure, we don't care if you kill everything. How would you pump that much water in one day? That's really hard. And then you would only take care one day out of 60 or 90 days of releases. And so these are the volumes of water that we're trying to deal with.
Historically, the lake spilled its excess water over its southern brim, creating a shallow sheet that was the Everglades. After deadly hurricanes in the 1920s and 1940s, the lake was contained within an earthen dike that today is among the nation's most urgently in need of repair.
Herbert Hoover Dike, we've said for several years now, is not a structure that we have a lot of faith in terms of being able to withstand high water levels.
John Campbell of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers stands atop the dike in Clewiston, eyeing a construction site 30 feet below. The project is part of a billion-dollar dike refurbishment scheduled to be complete in 2025.
One of the big reasons we release water is to protect the integrity of the dike. Lake Okeechobee already has a history of taking large amounts of human life.
Hurricanes in the 1920s killed thousands. As described in the Zora Neale Hurston novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God. The Corps will look into storing more water in the lake as the rehabilitation nears completion. But there are ecological concerns about that, especially for the grass beds that provide important habitat for spawning fish and other species. Here's marina owner Marianne Martin, who's worried about the ecological impacts of a rising lake.
If the intent of this levee is to build it strong enough to hold 18, 19 feet lake level, you have just put a knife into this lake. Into the heart of this lake.
At a lakeside marina in Pahokee, a great blue heron squawks as it flaps into the air. Diana Jenkins reels in a crappie. It squirms on the pavement. At stake here is an economy reliant on Lake Okeechobee and the farmlands the reservoir would replace. The region is the nation's largest producer of sugarcane. But Jenkins isn't worried about that now. She fishes here nearly every day.
I love it. It's very relaxing. Just to come and sit by the water, whether you catch fish or not, it's still all right.
She plans on cooking up her catch for her family. Amy Green in Orlando.
Now we're moving north of Lake Okeechobee. People there argue they need a reservoir instead of the one proposed south of the lake. But reporter Amy Green explains the research shows that Florida needs both.
Among the cow pastures and citrus groves of Florida's heartland north of Lake Okeechobee, patches of wetlands like this one serve as kidneys for the Everglades.
It filters out all the impurities. In this case, we're talking about nutrients, phosphorus in particular.
Ernie Marks of the South Florida Water Management District steps through the grass, framing the expanse of reeds and rushes. The vegetation sees from the water the nutrient responsible for toxic algae blooms. Wading birds like egrets flap among the cabbage palms. Mark says more water storage is needed here north of the lake. New research suggests the river of grass historically was much wetter than previously thought and calls for additional storage throughout the Lake Okeechobee and Everglades regions.
The next natural step is to look to the north, and not only to look to the north because of the absence of storage that we currently have there, but having something to the north gives us ultimate flexibility where we send the water.
The Water District's focus here puts the state agency charged with overseeing Everglades restoration at odds with Senate President Joe Negron and environmental groups. They are fixed on a southern reservoir. After excess lake water inundated estuaries last year on Florida's east and west coasts, triggering toxic blooms that prompted emergency declarations in four counties. Both reservoirs are part of the world's largest environmental restoration of its kind, a $17 billion rehabilitation of the Everglades. But Wendy Graham of the University of Florida Water Institute says nearly 20 years after Congress approved the effort, almost no water storage has been added, and only a small amount is designed or under construction.
The problem is so big that every increment only achieves a little bit of the solution. You have to look at the system as a whole to really see the system-wide benefits. And we need storage north of the lake, and we need storage south of the lake, and neither one of those is going to be the end of the problem.
Mark said the South Florida Water Management District says a northern reservoir could provide up to a third of the water storage needed in the Everglades. That's important because the watershed spans central and south Florida and supports the drinking water of more than a third of Floridians. Planning began last year, and the project could be ready for congressional approval as soon as 2019. But work on a southern reservoir isn't scheduled to start until 2021. Negron and environmental groups want to speed that up. But Mark says the Water District must follow the schedule unless the governor or legislature direct otherwise.
It looks at leveraging all of those benefits as we move forward through time. So if it makes sense to implement one project before another because you can reap a certain benefit from doing so, that was what our engineers and scientists went through in developing the schedule.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says it could deviate from the schedule with a state partner, like the South Florida Water Management District or another state agency. A northern reservoir is only part of an effort to add storage throughout the region. A restoration of the Kissimmee River nearly is complete. The state also is partnering with landowners like ranchers to store water on their land.
It could be a lot better?
Yes, it could.
On Lake Okeechobee's north shore, Eileen Massey eyes her fishing pole, frustrated by the rod's stillness.
It's the closest you'll ever get to Jesus. It's right here on the spear. I believe that. To me, it is. I love it. I love every minute I'm out here.
But Massey says the fish aren't biting. For 9 years, she's fished here. She remembers when the lake looked cleaner.
If we, as people, don't take care of our waterways, that when our grandchildren are old enough, if we live long enough to have grandchildren, what's going to be left for them to do? I mean, the waterways is the most important thing we got.
The fight over Florida's waterways is poised to dominate the spring legislative session. Amy Green in Orlando.
I'm Robin Sussingham, and this is Florida Matters. As we heard from Amy Green, the debate over Central and South Florida's water is expected to be a hot topic during this year's legislative session. Just before the session got underway, I spoke about it with William March, a political columnist with the Tampa Bay Times. He goes by the nickname Wendy. Wendy, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks, Robin. Nice to be here.
So, Wendy, the Everglades cleanup saga continues. There's one proposal to build 60,000 acres south of Lake Okeechobee as a water storage reservoir. What's happening with that proposal?
Well, Senator Joe Negron, who is in a very powerful position as Senate president, wants to create this reservoir, wants to spend the money to buy it, but he doesn't have support from either the governor or the state house and Speaker Richard Corcoran on that proposal.
Why not? So,
well, at least one reason is that Rick Scott, in his budget proposal, proposed spending far less money on environmental land preservation than Negron's plan would require. Another reason, frankly, is this is always going to be a difficult subject in Florida because of the opposition to big sugar, the sugar industry. At least a couple of key legislators, Matt Caldwell and Denise Grimsley, are looking at running for agriculture secretary, and they want the support of the sugar industry if they do. The current agriculture secretary, Adam Putnam, is looking at running for governor, and he wants the sugar industry support. So that's at least part of the problem.
And what you're saying is a lot of that land that they would need to buy south of Lake Okeechobee is growing sugar cane.
Correct.
So they would need to... they would pay them, but it would be sort of an eminent domain sort of a situation?
It could be.
Is there land that they could buy that's not owned by sugar companies? Or?
Well, there are other places that they're looking around at to see where they could, but the big problem there is finding the vast amount of land you need for a meaningful storage reservoir to store and treat or allow the water to clean itself from the vast amounts that are discharged from Lake Okeechobee.
And the money, as I understand it, is there. It would take $1.2 billion, I think, to buy this 60,000 acres. But the money's there because there's money set aside from Amendment 1.
Well, that opens up another controversy, Robin, because there was money designated by Amendment 1 that would be adequate to pay for this reservoir plan.
And this was money that was supposed to be set aside. The voters voted to set aside this money to purchase environmentally sensitive land.
But since that amendment passed, environmentalists say the legislature has simply just ignored it. They haven't spent the money for that purpose and aren't willing to now. As I pointed out, Governor Rick Scott's budget includes only about $25 million for environmentally sensitive land purchases. That's far less than what the Amendment 1 advocates say should be involved because of the requirements of the amendment.
Thank you so much to William Wendy March, a political columnist with the Tampa Bay Times. Thanks for joining us, Wendy.
Glad to be here, Robin.
That's it for today's show. Thanks to our colleagues, Kate Stein at WLRN in Miami and Amy Green at WMFE in Orlando. You can find more on the series River of Grass, Dying of Thirst on our website, WUSFnews.org. And be sure to leave a comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at Florida Matters. Our show is produced by Stephanie Colombini. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.